The fine chalk line and put the needle to the grind. Representing one kind, see an eye for the blind. Witness what I carry on, bears a further purpose. From how we do slam a few, then you wanna purchase. A dialogue of funk, you love to pop it in your trunk. I win more discipline than a Shaolin monk. Beat rock and CL, well set to spark it. The powerful target to destroy the black market. But when you say black, listen, I don't know, you lose me. I guess another beggar can't afford to be choosy. I come to the maximum, artist on the major label. Any duplication of this one is fatal. On 125, I gotta hit you live. Beat your ass with my tape, any race or shape. Cause if they got mine, they got...
Beat your ass with my tape, then erase all shape. Some CL over here. Oh, whoa. I gotta raise the volume here a little bit.
You gotta raise the volume. You gotta clear your throat.
My bad. I didn't.
You got a cough for me too?
I got like sick a couple of weeks ago.
You're always sick, dude. Every flipping week.
Well, it didn't last.
Every single podcast, dude. You'll be talking and then all some professional, man.
Yeah. Well, hey. I
thought you were a broadcaster only.
I championed through it.
You championed through it?
Yes.
With your champion sound?
Yes.
No, nobody knows.
Song boy.
Nobody would get that, dude. You know? We're dating ourselves over there. Chop down sound.
Ben had my donuts over here.
Yeah, that's you.
Bad News Ramen to the left of me.
It's
right
me.
Over there
it's
in
me.
Front of me. Man, a lot has gone on since last we spoke wrestling. And the thing that is really on my mind in the forefront is something that happened on Raw.
It's been my experience. If something's in the forefront of your mind, especially if you put the phrase forefront of your mind, like the ghettos of the mind, hey, Pete Rock, right there.
Ghettos of the mind.
You talk about that first.
All right, well, I'll go ahead and do that, but I just want to say, it was actually, Payback was a pretty good...
It looked good.
Yeah, and I don't want to besmirch it by skipping over, but and I don't even know how long we can really go with this because you know, despite the fact that I know you use your WWE Network
I didn't watch
subscription.
It.
Yeah. Well, I know you use your subscription quite often. You don't really watch much NXT.
I did watch NXT
today.
I saw the Sami Zayn, the first Sami Zayn and Kevin Steen match for the title where that Steen won. Was it Owens? I'm sorry.
Yes.
And I saw Tommy versus Tyler Breeze.
Okay.
The best out of three.
Okay.
So I've been trying to catch up a little bit.
Okay.
But you saw the event tonight, right?
I did.
Okay. And that was probably falls out, right?
It was a good overall event. The main event was not much except for the appearance of Samoa Joe. Made it all worthwhile.
So I missed it.
You did.
Great.
You did.
Great. Great.
But yeah, Samoa Joe showed up. Joe looks good right now. He looks like he slimmed down a little bit. But yeah, the Kevin Owens appeared.
Did he do the muscle buster?
No, he didn't fight. He just stared down.
He did the classic Lex Luger where he comes out. Oh, who the hell is that? It's Lex Luger.
Nah, they didn't go that. There was no Schiavoniisms here.
Okay.
It was they knew exactly who.
Well, that was also a. Larry Zbyszko too.
Well,
who the hell is that?
Zbyszko's pretty bad too.
It's like, well, who the fuck were you?
Yeah. So Kevin Owens making his main roster debut on Raw.
It's not a main roster debut.
His main roster.
Well, I mean, but he's not going to show up next week.
No, but I mean, he's going to be on in like a week or two. They're going to have the Elimination Chamber pay per view, and I think he's going to fight for the U.S. title there. So, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you know, it's his first showing up on Raw, and he had a major impact. I thought he was great, man.
I fast-forwarded it.
I'm sure you did. Nah, I thought he was great. Like, he's an interesting promo for me.
I thought he was a great promo.
Yeah, but it's not like, he's got, like, a quiet confidence about him, right? He's not, like, a yeller and screamer, I'm going to kick your ass and this and that. Like,
he doesn't talk real quiet. Then he talks real loud.
No, he's very he's got the mellow thing, but it's like with purpose, right? Like he's measuring his words, straight to the point. And the thing that I really liked, I really liked how not just that he kicks Cena's ass, but how like what I've been wanting for a lot of these guys to say when John and Cena's always they bring these guys through and he tries to talk down to them like, oh, you're some rookie that just showed up here and I've been here for you know however long I've been here.
He made a mistake because he didn't rap. You know, he could have busted a rap and put everybody to shame. That was his problem.
Yeah, well, it might have done it had Steam not thrown down on him with the pop-up powerbomb.
My name's John Cena. I like to rap. I look at Kevin Owens and I say he's crap. You know, I mean, he could have done something like that, you know? Pretty good, right? That was off the top of the dome.
You could have probably written that for him. And yeah. He said, that's gold, John. That's gold. So, I mean...
You're just like, jealous of my rapping technique, dude.
It's been many Cena's.
Styles, many styles. AJ Styles, AJ Styles. No?
No.
Am I pissing you off yet?
No.
Has the mood changed yet?
Only because you told me I should go with it and then keep talking about some John Cena raps. But, I thought he was really good. I like how, I've been waiting for somebody to tell Cena, hey, I've been doing this longer than you, so shut up. And that's exactly what you got out of him. I want to see the match. I think it definitely, brings this open United States Challenge thing to a new level. But then I'm concerned that Owens has a ton of momentum. I don't know that it's going to necessarily kill his momentum, but, I mean, he's a guy that you could bring to the main roster right now and insert into, like a very, very serious, very good programs. And I wouldn't want to see it get killed by him, just having to one-off Cena once again.
I think even if he one-off Cena, I don't think it's going to hurt him. I mean, there's a lot of things about him coming out and the promo that he cut. You're right. I mean, everything was very calculated, very measured. And he surprised me a lot with how much poise he had for his debut. It wasn't scripted. I mean, it was scripted, but it didn't sound like it was scripted where, Zayn's debut, I don't even think he got on the mic. But as someone as popular as Zayn that has the cred that Zayn has, it just shows the difference. And it really kind of shows kind of the whole dichotomy of these two guys, of how their careers have paralleled each other. Even watching NXT, that match, just kind of, they told a good story there before the match, and then the match was really good. It was just it's kind of one of those things where I really didn't get excited. I mean, I was like, this is good. This is working. But then he just cuts this promo and everything's just very level, very easy. And this guy isn't a long time in NXT. I mean, this guy's ready now. And I was just everything that happened. I mean, it wasn't, let's take like Rusev, right? Rusev versus John Cena. John Cena and Rusev have to pull out all the cliches and pull out all the stops to make it interesting.
And all the gimmicks, all the different matches.
And with this one, I mean, that you have the powerbomb right off the bat. He has a chance to do the open challenge and win the title right then and there. But even then, it's like, if it would have been any other NXT guy, they would have had the match and John Cena would have kicked out, and then John Cena would have won, and then it would have been squashed. I'm going to give credit to John Cena. I think John Cena, over the past couple of weeks with these NXT guys, he's really, I wouldn't say he's done the job for him, but he's made everybody look good. You can start that off with Neville. The match he had with Neville, I thought Neville came out, looked like $1 million. Rusev broke it up. But, I think that was one of the first matches where I really enjoyed watching Neville, and I think that really kind of set him up for his match with Wade Barrett that he had on Raw, which I thought was a really good match. It was a fun match to watch. He does the job for Zayn, even though he beat Zayn. He protects Zayn. Zayn looks great. And then you have this thing where John Cena actually does a job for Kevin Steen and is laid out with Kevin Steen's powerbomb. I don't know what to say. I mean, I do not get this right now. I have no idea what the hell is going on with WWE, because everything they're doing right now with the guy that I hate the most, they're playing it right. So I've been really happy with the overall end-all product. And the thing was, is that it was halfway through Raw, and I didn't feel that there was a drop off after that. I mean, it was good. I mean, every segment they did was a good segment. I mean, even Owens talking to Triple H after in the back that worked really well. So it's funny. I think we can end this podcast right now. Good show. Yeah,
good show. There's nothing to complain about, right? How we gonna do another hour? Even today, on the pre-match interview, he was talking about something about, like with the Sami Zayn and Cena stuff. And he's like, he's getting pissed. He's like, don't you ever even think that you can give John Cena any credit for that injury. That's all me. I hurt Sami Zayn. And really sticking to that point that he's the guy that took Sami Zayn out. So, he's staying in the character very well. Everything that he's saying, like has a lot of logic behind it. And yeah, like he didn't get rattled at all. Like and he's, like Cena has his little spots when he starts playing to the crowd and pandering. And usually even guys that, you know, I've seen have been pretty good on the mic but are like younger guys, like sometimes they have no response. Like Steen, like just looked completely like he didn't care and was completely unrattled by the whole thing. Thought his presence was really good. And like I was saying a few months ago, like when I was first hearing rumblings that Samoa Joe might be coming to WWE, I mean that's the fight right there. That's the match between those two guys that I really want to see. So I mean I am looking forward to this Elimination Chamber, and specifically that Owens versus John Cena match. But then, you know, if he goes back to NXT and then he goes into a program with Samoa Joe, I think that is going to be really good for NXT also. I mean, there's a ton of guys. I don't want to say a ton, but there's a handful of guys in NXT that are ready to go straight to the big show right now. And I'm hoping that at least that they'll do it sooner than later. Even if it's like they're coming up and they're going back down a little bit. Like Owens is ready, Samoa Joe is ready, obviously, and Finn's ready too. So we'll see what happens.
I am predisposed not to like Kevin Owens. I mean, he doesn't have a great look. You know, he reminds me of like Tank Abbott, but as much as a reputation that Tank Abbott had, and when he went into the ring, he just totally sucked. Owens is the direct opposite. I mean, you can take his reputation that he had before he came into the WWE, and you can multiply it by like 10. I mean, the guy, you know, his look isn't all that great. I'm watching the Zayn match and Owens match, and I thought, you know, when Owens first won, I thought it was a little bit kind of forced, but then like the last like 10 minutes of that match, it was good. I mean, he pulls off that crazy kind of shoulder breaker move, and I'm just sitting going like, wow. And then it's just back and forth, and then of course they play that whole kind of card where Zayn, you know, isn't going to give up, and he takes like 3 or 4 power bombs, and they stop the match. So it's like things like that I do not like. I don't like those type of matches. But there's such a presence about this guy. He has the intangibles. It's like you can't go out there and say like, well, Owens brings you this, he brings you that, he brings you this. He's fat. You know, you can tell he's tough. You don't know about his mic skills until he comes in and he rips it against Cena. I mean, granted, he is going against Cena, so anybody that shows that they're not intimidated by Cena automatically has a great promo. And I think that's really the biggest thing out of everything was that he had such poise. Most of the time, everybody's like Cena's foil, and you're right. I mean, he knocked it out of the park, and all of a sudden, he's a guy that I want to see. You know, and then you throw in, you know, Samoa Joe into the mix, and whatever it is, you have these mid-card guys now that can go against each other, and they can carry a show. And before, you'd have like a guy like Dolph that could make a guy look like $1 million. Now you have guys in a Sami Zayn, in a Kevin Owens, that they can go back and forth, and they can have great matches. Both of them look great. You're bringing in a guy like Neville, and I'm not a big fan of Neville, but the guy can work, and I'm a fan of good workers. And he made, you know, he looked good, but I thought he made Wade Barrett look like $1 million. And that's what you're supposed to do as kind of like a mechanic or a jobber or a technician. And then you throw into the fact too that they're really that Ambrose all of a sudden is having this great rivalry with Seth Rollins. And 4 or 5 months ago, they had the same rivalry, and it didn't go anywhere. Now, all of a sudden, they're playing it right. So, it's looking good. The one thing that I want to say, and I kind of want to get your reaction on it, I'm a big fan of Hideo Itami, but after watching that match with Tyler Breeze, I was really unimpressed by that whole thing, that best 2 out of 3 matches, because, you know, but I'm kind of tempering that with kind of his debut in WrestleMania, going against the Big Show and doing all those flash kicks and stuff and everything. I don't know if it's more Tyler Breeze than Itami. Maybe Tyler Breeze isn't a good person to work off of, but Hideo really didn't impress me that much. I mean, when he did that first flurry, he does the kicks, he puts a guy in the corner, he does that drop kick, which I really think it's pretty. That's a pretty weak segment. And then he goes back to it again. He did it like three times, and I'm coming away from this match really kind of going, I don't know, dude. I mean, he seems to me like he's one of these Japanese wrestlers that can do like a lot of kind of striking moves, but he needs to develop something else. And that's the only really concern I have with that guy. But then at the same time, then you throw him, you know, then you bring up Samoa Joe today. Then you bring up like Finn Balor, who I still haven't watched him in NXT, so that's probably what I'm going to do next. But
yeah,
I don't know.
So I've seen like pretty much everybody. Like it seems like kind of Tyler Breeze is the stepping stone for guys as they're about to go up to the main roster.
There it is.
One more.
Oh, come on. bad man.
That's good.
I got to carry your ass all the time.
Nah, I'll bring the knowledge here. Yeah, he's kind of the stepping stone for a lot of the guys on their way up. Like, he was that for Bo Dallas a little bit. He fought Neville. All these guys. So, like, he's always in the mix for that NXT title, but he's never winning it. I've seen a few matches of his against various opponents. He's all right. I mean, I think his gimmick's pretty weak. And then I think he doesn't have, like, the overwhelming talent to back it up in the ring. Like, if he had a less annoying gimmick, he might feel like he's all right in the ring, but it's almost like, it's not as bad as Fandango, because I think he plays his character better than Fandango does, but it's similar to that. He's okay in the ring, nothing special. I think the thing that's hindering Itomi, for me at least, is why they're not letting him use the GTS. It's his move to begin with. There's no CM Punk, so there's nothing to conflict in there. I think they should just let him use a GTS, and I think that's what it is, because basically they got both him and Belor using that like double foot stomp off the top rope, which it's an okay spot, but I'm not like really high on it as like a finish. But even if you are, I think it should be a move that's kind of protected, and the guy, like a guy that does it, like he's kind of the specialist of it. I think bringing both of these guys in and having them have the same kind of like working style anyway, and then the same finish, that kind of hinders for them, because I think Finn is really taking off, and I think he's kind of overshadowing what Itomi's doing. So I kind of agree with what you're saying. He hasn't like been brilliant to me, but again, I don't think much of Tyler Breeze, though. Baylor had a pretty good match with Breeze today. Yeah, he's hurt, so we'll see what happens.
He's hurt.
Itomi. He's okay. Out for a few months. He didn't participate today. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. Maybe he goes to the drawing board in his timeout and comes up. Because I think I'm coming up with some more moves. Because I know he's got a ton of moves, and that's the thing. I think
his heel to plank kick, which they call it something else. When he throws a guy off the ropes, and he does, I mean that's a legit move. I mean that move is. He actually did it better in Japan.
Right.
And I think that has more to do with Tyler Breeze than Itomi himself. But,
sure.
Yeah, he has plenty of moves. And you take away his GTS, and yeah, you're right.
Right. I think they need to go back to letting him do more of what got him to be the reason why they wanted to bring him in the first place. Don't go overboard trying to make him, like, work the WWE style. Let him do what he does, because, they don't have anybody like that.
Have you ever seen Itomi do the GTS?
I'm on YouTube's YouTube clips,
and I think he does it way better than CM Punk does. So.
Yeah, and I think he also has like a pretty solid submission, if I'm not mistaken. Also, so I think there's stuff there for him to do. But I think his matches have been kind of vanilla. But I think it's one of those things where we know like overall kind of what he is and what he has at his disposal, and it's like a watered down version of what Hideo Itomi should be. So maybe they can get back to that when he gets healthy.
So let me pose you a question real quick. Seth Rollins, now that he doesn't have the curb stomp, I feel like you ever make a creative wrestler and you need like the perfect finisher for that guy and you can't find it?
Mm-hmm.
I really feel that that's what he's doing right now. A lot of people are bagging on his pedigree.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think about his pedigree?
I thought the one that he delivered on the pay-per-view was pretty weak. I thought it was much better on Raw. Still not, as much as I don't like Triple H, like he doesn't deliver the pedigree as good as Triple H by any means. But I think the move makes sense for him.
What do you think of the pedigree? Even when Triple H was doing it, do you think that's a legit finisher?
I think that's a legitimate finisher, for sure. from something I was reading today, it sounded like the curb stomp isn't completely gone. It's more like they have it on hold while they're dealing with some concussion lawsuits, and once that's over, then they may bring the move back, which I think that's the perfect move. I think that move fits Rollins so well.
Yeah, exactly.
And it, like, just the way that he can pull it out of anywhere. Like, I mean, the Randy Orton match at WrestleMania, so that's all I got to say about that. But for the time being, if he's going to go to the pedigree, I don't really have a big problem with it. But I think he just needs a little more experience with it. I mean, Triple H was doing it for 20 years, right? So, like, he had that move down, right? Trip, I've never seen Rollins do it. And kind of similar saying about, kind of what we're saying about Itomi here. I mean, if you go and do, like, a Suicidal Dragon, like, top 10 finishers of Seth Rollins, I mean, there was a ton of ridiculous stuff that he could pull off in the indies that I would love for him to be able to go to any of those, but I guess maybe they deemed them too dangerous for WWE or whatever. So, you know, I think it is what it is for now. I think it's passable. I think it makes sense, being that he's, like, supposed to be the guy that's studying under the tutelage of Triple H, for him to use that move. And hopefully pretty soon they'll be able to go back to using that curb stomp again, because I think that is the ideal move for him.
What do you want to talk about now?
We could talk about... So you hadn't gone back and watched Payback at all?
I haven't watched Payback at all.
Okay. Well, let's do this then. Let's just wrap this up. Since we started off talking about this NXT TakeOver today. Speaking of guys that are ready for the main roster, and when I started watching NXT, I never thought that I'd be saying this, because I thought she was just kind of your typical, like, diva, like, good character, but not really going to amount to much in the ring. Sasha Banks is ready to go to the main roster right now. Like, she is good in the ring. And that Becky Lynch chick, the match was really good. That was one of the better diva matches I've seen in a long time. I already know Charlotte, like, in the ring-wise, is ready, but I don't know, character-wise, she's got much other than being the daughter of Ric Flair. But the Sasha Banks is very good. Like, mic-wise, pretty good. And last 2-3 matches I've seen her in, she's really good in the ring, too. So, I was really impressed with Sasha Banks in this match. And if you haven't seen any of her matches in NXT, she's pretty good. She could go right there and make noise. And I think they could use someone like her. You could go either way with her. She's kind of getting some fan support, so I think they could use her as a face if they needed to. But I mean, I think she's best suited to play a heel, and it looks like they might need some of both right now.
Is the Divas division now, is it getting any close to TNA Knockouts that was probably about three, four years ago?
No, because all of the women that were in that Knockouts division at that time had a bunch of service time, so they weren't learning on the job. But I'd say it's kind of tough to quantify, because do you look at it as like the WWE Divas roster and the NXT roster, or if you were to combine the two, if you were to take the best half, the top half of what's on the Raw roster and the top half of what's on the NXT Divas roster, I think you would have something that's pretty serviceable as a top to bottom Divas division.
You know, with that Divas division, I'm actually interested in it now. I mean, I think Naomi and here I go again trying to get to me. I was going to get there, Dee. You know, just give me a second. You know, instead of looking off into space when I lose my train of thought, I usually can kind of ad lib until it's ready to go. Like I just did right there. You see?
I was just trying to not have to clear my throat or something.
So yeah. No, but I thought that match was really good. I thought the tag match with New Day. I thought Big E cut a great promo. Kofi cut a serviceable promo, and then you had the Lucha Dragons come out for the save, and then they turn on Cesaro and Kid, and then you have all the tag teams come out, and then
Primetime players stand tall at the end.
It's just a good, you know. It's funny. There were some rumblings that having a pay per view 2 weeks after Payback is a little bit too much, but they're playing this well, and the whole thing is them incorporating kind of the vacant Intercontinental Championship within a Elimination Chamber as well. It's like, they're giving you a lot of reasons to watch. Where before I felt that the Intercontinental Championship would be like the only draw for this show. But yeah, you know, that's what happens when you finally have the deep roster, You develop everybody. You don't play them out. You don't job everybody. Everybody has an equal chance, and it looks really good. I mean, you look at the tag team division, Cesaro and Kidd. I mean, those are the guys that should be champions right now. But then you have, you know, New Day getting the good heat, and then I think you have the Lucha Dragons, really doing great work in the ring. So you kind of want to see them succeed as well. And then you throw in prime time players, yeah. And then they come in and they clean house, and now you want to see them. So it's moving fast, and I can't believe that after WrestleMania that everything is so hot right now, because usually you'll have a lull, and I think really what it does is I would have to agree a little bit with John Cena. I'll tell you right now, John Cena cut a decent promo. I mean, with the whole kind of, you know, the world championship is the belt, but you know, the U.S. championship, this is your belt. I mean, yeah, he pandered, but it worked, you know. So, I mean, it's just, you know, I'm not saying I'm like starting to pull out my neon shirts and stuff and everything, or going to Hot Topic and buying a John Cena shirt, but.
Go to Kmart and get some shoes.
Does he sell shoes at Kmart? You remember how, like, Kmart, back in, like, the early 80s, you would not be caught dead in a Kmart?
Buying the McGregor.
The McGregor. I don't even know what the hell that is.
That was their house brand, like, baseball gloves. And
see, you know that. I don't know that, but there was a big stigma. See, you lived on a street where you really didn't play outside that much.
And that's not true at all. I was outside pretty much all the time.
And how many kids did you play with on your street?
Quite a few. I was just the youngest one, so that's why I was able to compete with the older people at all times. Down the park down the street, I was playing football, baseball all day long, every day down there.
With how many kids? See, you had a park though.
Up to 20.
See, you had a bunch of kids on my street. We didn't have a park, so we got in a. We'd break into like the abandoned house and stuff, and you know we'd bag on each other and stuff, and like break windows and stuff, and go out in the field and have mud fights and everything.
I was a good kid. I had the park right there.
Yeah, because you had the park. I
remember. I also had the snake. You remember the snake next to my house? The big dirt open field that was there for most of my childhood. The one street over.
You didn't have the shuttle though. The shuttle was legit. You don't even know what the shuttle is. Yeah. So we had a street, and then we had the street over, and all the kids, like, you know, that's like a block over, right? And it probably takes you about maybe 5-6 minutes to get to that side of the street, which back in the, you know, when you were a kid, 5-6 minutes is like more like a half an hour, 45 minutes to walk there or ride your bike. So at the shuttle was, you had the two fences. And I had a broken part of my fence, so people would use the shuttle. Whenever they get in trouble, they would, like, knock on my door, like, oh, I need to use the shuttle. Like, yeah, go ahead. You know, like, they'd get in trouble with their parents or something like that, so they'd like, go in the shuttle and, like, end up on the opposite side of the street. It'd probably take you longer to go through the shuttle, but people would use it and stuff. So it was just cool, like, you know, I'm going to use the shuttle today. Like, hey, go use the shuttle, and we'd go in and stuff like that. But my point with the whole thing with Kmart was that, you know, we just bagged on everybody, right? Like, if you didn't have the right type of shoes, or, you know, if you couldn't, if someone would put you down and you couldn't do a good comeback, they would just bag on you with that. But Kmart, you wouldn't be caught dead in Kmart, dude.
No, that's the thing. That's why you need to know that's where the McGregor came from, because when you identified that, you let them know, oh, you got that Kmart, bruh. There's a Kmart in Milpitas, man. That was the spot.
Kmart was the spot?
No, it was the spot where, I mean, it was there, so you always knew there was people going there. So my dad and I had a running joke about it, that was how good it was.
That everybody was at?
No, that he was, that you know, who was shopping at Kmart all the time.
And he was bagging on him?
No, me and him.
No, but he was bagging on the people that were shopping at Kmart?
No, at me. Like, saying, oh, I got my stuff there, or we even had it going in the house, man. It was all over the place. That crossed over the border, man. That was not a loan to San Jose. We had the same smack talk going too.
Yeah, but I think mine was worse though. Like, I think my parents went to Kmart one time to get like some garden tools or something, and I like hid in the back seat. Like, I wouldn't come out from the back seat because I didn't want to have anybody see me at Kmart. Yeah. Even though nobody knew me at Kmart, but yeah. And you go to a Kmart now. For my old job, I used to have to go to Kmart all the time. I'd have to take prices and stuff for milk. Always a lot of fun, right? Going to a flipping Kmart. So there was one time I went to Kmart. I park. Two accidents happened while I'm walking to the Kmart. There's two parking accidents that happened. And, you know, usually, like, I'd be like, oh, you know, I saw the whole thing. But I was like, go ahead. You can keep on arguing about that stuff. I walk into the Kmart. Some lady's, like, beating up on her boyfriend or something like that over there. And then I keep on going, and, like, some mom's, like, beating up on her kid. And I was like, okay, cool. So Kmart, it's bad, man. It's not good.
No. And then now Walmart has supplanted it. But let's not tarry over into that territory and go back to wherever it was, John Cena's shoes, and how much you're liking John Cena these days.
Oh, I love John Cena. Yeah, that was the main point I was trying to say.
Right, I know. I didn't want to lose focus on that.
Good interpretation of it.
Yes.
No, the promo worked, and then you have Kevin Owens come out, and Kevin Owens kills him on the mic. So I was happy through and through.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny to think that that Raw top to bottom was as good as it was, and there was no Roman Reigns and there's no Randy Orton. Like, as intricate as they are to the storylines that are happening right now, they're doing a pretty good job. Had a fear there that opening segment was going to go really bad, and it wasn't great, but it worked for what it was. I think they cut it off at the right time and got into the wrestling, which made it good. So, yeah.
Sheamus looks good, you know, coming out as well.
Yeah. So, here, I'm going to ask you a question, because my son Logan asked me a question.
He said, Dad, what's your finisher?
No.
What would your finisher be?
I think I'd go, I don't know, I think I'd go with a vertical suplex and
try Ghostbuster? The flown over suplex?
Nah, like, instead of falling down with the guy, just, like, let him fall backwards and keep holding onto his head, and then when he got about parallel with the ground, just sit down, neck breaker.
Yeah. Good.
I'd go something like that.
That's good. That's good on the fly. Okay, go ahead.
So
you're not nose kick. I mean, Logan asked you a question.
Yes, he said, I forget, he was asking me something about heel, but then the end of the day, the question was, who's the number one heel in WWE? And it had to make me think, right?
Were you looking up in the rafters?
I did.
Did you go? Like that? Easy there,
it's a tough question there, Logan.
Well,
very
complicated.
Yeah, so I mean...
What, do you think I got a blowjob? Where's my tire iron? Mike, you want to go downtown?
You
want to go downtown and pick up some prostitutes?
I go first.
I don't do sloppy seconds, my cause.
I mean, initially, I know the number one heel in the company is Seth Rollins, right? That's clear. But a lot of people really like Seth Rollins, so I don't know that he's really can qualify as like a true heel. So then my first instinct is to say it's Triple H and Stephanie, which I think they're trying to do, but I mean, they've been gone for a while, so maybe they are, maybe they're not. So actually, a guy actually came to my mind, so before I go and throw that out there, I mean, let me hear what your answer is. Who do you think is, who's the top heel in WWE right now?
John Cena. He gets the most. Let me put it this way. So, either you cheer John Cena or you boo John Cena. And when John Cena gets boos, he gets more boos than anybody. I mean, more literal hate than anybody else. And that's what makes the WWE universe so great. No, I mean the whole thing is, in terms of straight fan ire, you know, even if it's 50-50. But I think most of the time it's more like probably 70-30 that people don't like John Cena. I mean, you take at WrestleMania, there's more people that are booing John Cena than they're cheering him.
But WrestleMania is not your typical crowd. Like, some of these, like...
That's when all the smarks come out. And
yeah, well, the international crowd definitely doesn't like John Cena. You get a lot more of those coming in for Mania. I'm talking about, like, when you go to, like your regular middle America towns, you still are probably talking about three-quarters of the crowd.
So saying John Cena is the easy way out, right? Is that the easy answer?
I just don't think that it's necessarily correct. I think with him, and part of my answer was it depends on what city you're in, right? But with John Cena, I think it definitely, there's some cities that hate John Cena, and there's a lot of cities that will support him, like, no matter what, and think he does no wrong.
So the top heel in WWE. I don't think there is one. I mean, there isn't. I mean, going straight down, I'm trying to think of some guy that makes the, you know, we kind of go by the formula. If you want to go by the textbook formula, you don't have a good babyface without a good heel. Even Triple H, I think people are starting to come around on Triple H
right.
a little bit.
And that, I don't. Yeah,
and like that has a lot to do with Rollins.
Yeah, a year ago, very easily it was Triple H and Stephanie, and maybe more so Stephanie than Triple H at this point. But I actually was able to come up with an answer, so I want to let you fish a little bit here and see if you could come up with something.
As a top heel, I would my answer would be there isn't one.
Best playing the best role of heel right now.
Playing the best role of heel would probably be Rusev. Rusev is probably I think is your typical heel. He hits all the buttons in terms of heel. He's the foreigner that puts down Americans. It's not forced when he does it. He has a good foil with Lana now where he's gotten a lot of heat because of how he treats Lana. And then, you do that kind of the whole thing where he sets up Dolph for a really good run. And I kind of want to talk to you about that as well. So I'd probably say in textbook heel where people generally don't like him. And even I think his ring work really doesn't lend itself to kind of have people like him just because his matches have been kind of boring. I would say Rusev is a close second. I'd probably say your top heel right now is probably Sheamus.
Yeah, that's what I told him. Yeah. I think Sheamus is doing a perfect job of what he's supposed to do right now. And it's hard to say he's the top heel because he's not in any kind of main event type program. But I think he's really carrying, not on his own, carrying the undercard, but the work that he's doing as a solid heel is making the entire like intercontinental picture and that mid-card match scene work. The matches that he's doing with Neville.
I'll just say this. When he came out and then Ryback comes out, and that's another thing too. Ryback, I thought Ryback was good on the mic. I mean, I thought he cut a really good promo for himself. I'm not saying it was end all say all promo.
Is this on the Adam Rose scale?
No. It's not on the Adam Rose scale. It's on the Adam Rose tip. It's straight from the Adam Rose tip. But
All right, Bill Vivivo.
Hey man, hey man. People, they don't know about No Poison, dude. You know,
when are we gonna have that song lead in the show?
I would have to play the whole song, and then Cardboard Icons would call me up and go, "Your song ran too long.
Your intro's too long. You forgot the ice."
But in that, even like that match, that I think is a perfect example of what he does, was because with Sheamus, I like Sheamus, but I really don't like him. When he's on the mic, it really, I'm not sitting there going oh, this man's cutting gold right now. It's dude, shut the hell up, and everything. Just because it's kind of like that. It's kind of like a shtick type, heel type promo. But he does it so well that a guy like Ryback can come out and cut a serviceable promo and make it seem like it's a really good promo. And then when I'm watching this match, I was very interested in watching this match, and I don't care about either one of those guys. And if Sheamus was playing the face like he was before he got hurt, I would definitely not care about this match. This is like fast forward material. I watched the whole match. I thought it was really good. Ryback got his spots in. I was happy with his spots, and I thought it ended well. I mean, the guy, he gets his eye hurt. The bro kick comes out, and then he plays it perfect after the pin's over, and all of a sudden, Sheamus even makes the commentators look good. I thought Michael Cole did a good job, selling. Yeah, exactly, Gene. But I mean, even then, Michael was like, "Oh, look!" All of a sudden, his eye's okay. So he makes everybody look good, even the commentators, which I don't like. I don't like Michael Cole. I never liked Michael Cole.
Booker though.
Yeah, Booker's great. Yeah, but he even made Michael Cole seem serviceable, where it actually it wasn't forced on Michael Cole's end either. I think Sheamus has done really well. He's come back. When he came back and he first turned heel, it really didn't do anything for me. But if you really look at the past, all these Raws, he's a major player in all these Raws and SmackDown, and he, for a small degree, he is carrying the show.
Yeah, I think he's a really good workhorse right now, and I think his mic skills have always been pretty good, but as a babyface, it was just a forced role that wasn't working. And I think now in the role he's in as a heel, he's able to be a lot more believable and not cheesy with what he's saying. Like, cause I think he's pretty good on the mic. It just has to be directed in the right way. And I think it's working. I think the on again, off again alliance with Wade Barrett works really well. I think it's helping. Like, it makes the undercard matches that mean something and something you want to see.
You have definitive lines with the roles that they're supposed to play, but at the same time, when they win, like I'm talking about Sheamus, I'm talking about Wade Barrett, I'm talking about New Day. When they win, you're happy with the win. When they lose, they're not doing jobs. Because they can still get that heat and stuff. And to tell you the truth, like, I think the guy that is getting hurt the most with the position that he's now is Wade Barrett, because people like Wade Barrett. I mean, you know, and he's playing that heel role, but at the same time, Neville looks good when he's facing him. It's an equal exchange. I mean, and this is like probably one of the first times where you have workers on both sides, and both of them are doing equal parts, and they're both boosting their stock by what they're doing, and nothing seems forced right now, because you win some, you lose some. And, you know, this kind of sounds very familiar of stuff that we said 3 years ago. You know, have some guys win, have some guys lose, and see how the character develops after that. Mm-hmm. And this is what they're doing. And the good news is that Wade Barrett had 3-4 months where he was on the mic the whole time, got a ton of heat for being on the mic. He gets back in the ring, he jobs a little bit, and we're going like, what the heck's happening? And then all of a sudden, he gets this King of the Ring, which really doesn't mean anything. But he's totally buying into the character. Like, I thought that it was going to be his death knell. Him putting on the, you know, him with the scepter, with the robe,
the crown.
And the crown. It works right now, man.
Yeah. I think he's just really charismatic, like, good talker. And as long as you let him talk and do his thing, then he's going to be okay. And then he's great in the ring, so it doesn't... The only time it hurts him is when you make him lose to guys that he has no business losing to.
Well, and his match with Neville made sense, right? I think Bo interfered, right? Did he interfere?
I think so.
Yeah, and so he interferes, and then right away, Barrett he can pull off his bullhammer so fast. Like, you know what's happening? You know, like, you see the situation. Like, they focus on Neville, and then they pan out and they show Wade Barrett in the corner. You know, the bullhammer is coming, and it's like, this is good. I mean, this is what it's supposed to be. There is no duck. There is no kick out. This is what it's supposed to be. Let the guy, protect the guy that way. You still protect Neville. And then with that whole thing, you build up a Neville versus Bo Dallas rivalry. Now Neville and Bo Dallas have a program going. Everything is just falling into place.
Yeah, and I think, since we're just talking about Sheamus, I mean, him, like, his bro kick and Barrett's bullhammer, like, they're both moves that doesn't take but a very small distraction for them to come out and get that legitimate finisher, so... Yeah, I think both of them kind of similarly are kind of carrying, in a lot of ways, the two of them are sharing a lot of the load of carrying that mid-card right now, and it's good that they're winning matches, too. You know, I'm fine. You know, I'm a big Dolph Ziggler fan, as has been well-documented, but, you know, I don't mind if he loses a match to Sheamus here and there, because, you know, he's also winning matches, and I think that's what makes that feud work for me.
Well, and plus, Dolph played that off really well, you know, like, coming out and saying, like, how do you feel after losing Sheamus? And they showed how he had to have stitches and stuff. And he's like, oh, I look terrible. And he just, like, he's like, I'm joking. So what I want to bring up is how do you feel? It's funny because, you know, we extol the virtues of Dolph Ziggler. And I'm not going to say that pairing him up with Lana is a good thing or a bad thing. What I can compare it to, because I kind of feel that whenever Dolph is at his height is when he's put with a female. Whether it's AJ, whether it's Lana now. There was another wrestler that was kind of like that as well, and he's one of the greatest of all times. We devoted a full podcast to him. I have two action figures. One of them I got as a Christmas present from you. How do you feel about Dolph Ziggler? Do you think he needs a female valet? And if he does or not, how do you think that affects him?
I don't think he does. I think he's... just kind of the way his character is, I think that it's an easy thing to fall back on, having him have a female valet. You know, he's a good-looking guy. you know, a lot of fangirling for him on the internet and whatnot. So, I mean, I think that's well established. So it's an easy thing to fall back on. It worries me a little bit, just because he's been doing so well in the singles run that he's had, and kind of it's just like one more thing that they can use as a crutch for him to get distracted. Because that's kind of the thing with Dolph Ziggler. Like he's having these really good matches, and all it takes is one guy to run out and like just turns around and completely forgets there's a match going on and loses. And that's one of the easy kind of cop outs to have him lose a lot of the matches that he does. So I don't know, because the thing with putting Lana next to him is gonna keep him being extremely popular, whether he wins or loses, because Lana's over as crazy. She's over as hell right now. So she can be there. He can be in his matches. Someone can go after her. He turns around. He gets beat. He goes on a long losing streak doing that. He's still going to be extremely popular because people like him, people like Lana. But I'm not positive it's going to actually benefit him in terms of wins and losses and kind of going after the Intercontinental Championship, which should be what this guy's doing right now.
How does this affect Lana now? Because I like her in the heel role. So how do you think this turn, do you think she has any type of future with what she's doing?
So it seemed like the stuff that I was reading over the last month or so, as you know, they're building up for this, was that McMahon wanted to make her like the number one, like perhaps like the number one diva. So, can she wrestle? I don't know. I have no idea. She doesn't strike me as someone.
It's never stopped the number one diva before.
Well, that's true. Usually, they end up coming around. The ones that are truly like number one divas end up coming around to being, you know, respectable wrestlers as far as women's wrestlers go. So, but I don't have any clue if she can and has any ability to do that. Like the Valley thing definitely works for her. The other thing that they're going to probably do is also reveal that she's, and this might shock you here, she's not really Russian.
What?
So I'm glad you were sitting down for that.
She's just like Kofi wasn't really Jamaican.
Exactly. And someone online had made a remark because her accent was much softer on that show, like subtly. But someone was kind of mentioning her accent's going the way of Kofi Kingston's Jamaican gimmick. But I mean, my guess is if they're pairing Lana with Dolph, then this is going to be now Dolph against Rusev. And I don't think that bodes well for Dolph, because Rusev, all the time they spent building this guy up, and then to make him look pretty silly against John Cena, I'm assuming the next feud they put him in, he comes out on top of it. So maybe that sets Dolph back a little bit. But hopefully he can still keep this formula that, you know, going against bigger guys like Barrett, and like Sheamus, and maybe now Rusev, that you know he still gets to win his fair share of the matches and stay relevant.
So I'm gonna apologize to the 8 or 10 people that listen to our podcast, because I'm gonna put you on the spot. I think you can hit this out of the park, but I'm praying that it's not gonna be like a 10-second or 15-second delay during each one.
Let me start looking at the ceiling.
There you go. There you go. Perfect. Yeah. You sure you don't have a cough in there too?
No, I think I'm looking right now.
Title reigns. I want to know how long do you think the reigns are going to be, and how long these runs are going to be for these champions. So New Day, how much longer do you think they're going to have this title?
2 weeks.
You think it's going to end
at the Elimination Chamber?
And are they better or worse for losing those titles?
For losing them, I think they'll be worse. I think what they're doing is working right now. But it seems like at this point they're going to pass the tag belts around a little bit. They've introduced now a bunch of these other new teams that seem to have a lot of momentum going. So my guess is one of these new teams will come out with the titles. I think the New Day having the titles right now has given a bunch of credibility to their promos and things like that. So I think it's working for them. So I think if they lose the belts, by definition, it's gonna set them back a little bit.
Who should they do the job for?
I really think that Cesaro and Kidd are the best team. I think that's the team that they should slow play it out, and at some point, Cesaro and Kidd win the belts back is what I think should happen. I got this dark horse feeling that that the primetime players might come out with that championship, or the Wyatts.
No, I'm doing a delay right now.
You're also looking at the ceiling.
I am looking at the ceiling. I did that. I don't know if I asked this. I think I'm good on that. I think I'm good. Okay. John Cena.
SummerSlam.
And who should he do the job for?
I'd like it to be Samoa Joe. Maybe it's going to be Kevin Owens. I don't know that there's anyone on the main roster that's going to take that. So I'm guessing one of those two guys, maybe.
And is it, so we really can't ask this question. It can't be a blanket question when you deal with John Cena. Will the universe be better or worse when John Cena loses the title?
My first reaction would be to say it's going to be worse, because then inevitably he's got to go after the world title.
He's their brand.
Inevitable. But I think if they play their cards correctly, if he drops that belt and then sets his sight on the world title and Seth still has it, then I think that could be a true, that could be a true measure of if John Cena is finally in the business of making other guys look good. So, and I mean, it'd be the same kind of guys he's going against right now in this open United States title defense. He's going against a lot of these younger guys, really good workers that can put on good matches. And if, you know, he gets done with that and then moves on and now wants to challenge Seth Rollins for that title, I think Seth Rollins needs to beat him, and that would really legitimize Seth Rollins if he's able to beat John Cena clean. And that would be one of the few guys that, like, that really are getting put, like, truly getting put over by John Cena.
Nikki Bella.
A month.
Who's she going to drop the title to?
Naomi.
Is that good or bad for Nikki Bella?
I think a push. To go, pardon the interruption over here, push. I think her career is pretty much what it is. Could be a good thing in just in that I think that she's a natural heel, and I think she's forced into the babyface role right now, which she's doing fine at. Both of them doing fine as the babyfaces, but I think they're really best suited to be heels. So if they drop the belt and they bring in Paige or whatever new babyface divas, then maybe the Bellas can go back to being heel, and that might be better served for them personally.
Seth Rollins.
Let's see what it's. Royal Rumble?
Royal Rumble? Who is he going to drop the title to?
Want to say Reigns. I'm thinking it's going to be Reigns, and if not, just as dark horse, I'll go Dean, but I think it's probably going to be Reigns.
Is it going to be better or worse for Rollins to drop that title?
Push. He's going to be fine either way. My guess, I'm just making this all up right now, but lose the title to Reigns at the Rumble. Come back in the Rumble, win the Rumble, rematch at Mania. That sounds like it works for me.
Who should he drop the title to?
I think Reigns is the right guy. It should be someone young and up and coming, someone that's in the same realm as he is. So Reigns works if it was played right, I wouldn't have no problem with him dropping the belt to like Bray Wyatt. And even if it's Ambrose or like if Finn can come up and make an impact, I mean that's probably way too fast that they would give that guy the run. But I really think like that could be something that would really be an interesting pairing as well.
Vacant Intercontinental title. When is that change gonna happen?
Elimination Chamber.
Yeah, all right. You sure?
I thought you were going to ask me when whoever wins it's going to lose it.
Yeah. Who should win it?
Who should win it? I mean, I'm biased. Dolph Ziggler should win it. Sheamus is going to win it, but I think Dolph should win it.
Is that going to be better? Would it be better for Dolph's career or worse for his career to win the Intercontinental Championship?
I think it'd be better. I think that is the glass ceiling for Dolph Ziggler right now. How many Intercontinental Championships can this guy run? And to a similar degree, it's kind of that's what it is for Wade as well. Like, these two guys, I think, have done everything that they can to push through to the main event picture, and doesn't seem like anyone's going to let that happen. So the best that they can hope for is to just stack up intercontinental reign after intercontinental reign. So I think it would be good for Dolph if he were to win it. But let's operate off the idea that Sheamus is going to win it.
Oh, so who should win the title?
No, Dolph should win it, but Sheamus is going to win it.
Okay.
And Sheamus, it will be good for his career to win it, getting him back to being relevant. I mean, I think he kind of got stuck in that spot, and not as much that it's his fault, but when you've been world champion and now you're dropped down on the card to, like, mid-level title status, and he hasn't been able to win one, and I think now they're coming to grips, kind of like with Cena. They've given him the U.S. title, and I think Sheamus is on that point to come to grips with. He's a mid-card guy right now, and the best he can do is a United States or an intercontinental run. I think he'll have a decent run, but that'll be more like a transitional, like, 2 to 3 month run, and then he'll drop it relatively soon, I'd say.
Crash Holly, Hardcore Championship.
In perpetuity.
Good.
Super heavyweight right there.
Super heavyweight, yeah. And he's passed away, so I don't want to talk too much about that.
I did not know that.
You know Crash Holly died?
No.
Yeah, he died. He just died about 3-4 years ago. Hmm. Yeah. Okay, so let's go ahead and get into our golden mic, and this is where we cross our fingers and make sure everything's up on the up.
Wait. Can we not quite do that just yet?
What the hell is that?
Screw
that Firefox update, dude. Okay.
So just one more thing, because I don't think we could let this slide by.
Macho Man.
All right. So in terms of payback, you should really watch that match. The card is good, and the main event, you know, regardless of what you think of the finish, just the whole dynamic of the Shield in a match.
Yeah.
That was awesome, dude.
Actually, I saw I saw the end of that match, because I wanted to see the Shield kind of form again. So I saw it. Actually, no, I didn't. I didn't see that match. I read it online.
Okay.
Yeah, but people were geeking out because of the Shield returned for a New York minute.
Yeah, it was cool. It was good seeing them work as a team. The whole spot was set up really well. They triple power bombed Orton through the table, and then I think they tried it and it didn't break, and then the crowd was yelling one more time, so they set it up and did it again. But the whole thing, Seth was pretty funny. He kind of got caught up in the moment with the whole thing, and so like they did their triple team and they power bombed him. And then, like, they were all kind of posing to the crowd, and then Seth got in the middle and stuck his hand out for the thing, and they looked at him, and they started kicking his ass, and it just worked. But, yeah, that was a really fun thing. I mean, and I think it just goes to show there's a ton of miles left in the Shield whenever they decide to reform that thing. Hopefully they'll do it before, like, you know, they're old and on their last leg. But they'll do it while these guys are still relevant and now a little bit more established and really – really be a dominant force, but yeah, it was really fun for the quick time that it lasted.
So you ready for the golden mic?
I couldn't not address that.
So this one's going to be the rusted mic. It's not going to be a golden mic, but there's a setup there.
There's a lot of things going on in the World Wrestling Federation right now, and yes, the Red Rooster wants to get his claw right in the middle of it and stir it up a little bit. A lot of people have been saying, what's been going on, Rooster? Well, everything's going on. The World Wrestling Federation is number one, and yes, the Red Rooster's trying to claw his way to the top of this federation. There's a lot of great talent around here, and I'll tell you why, because the fans are the greatest. I thank each and every one of you Rooster Boosters, because with your support and my Rooster Wing hold, I don't feel like there's a guy here that I can't beat. I'm not saying the competition isn't tough, because it really is. But with people out there, when I'm down and I'm tired and I'm sweating, I don't think I can have any more energy. The Rooster Boosters, go on, get up, Rooster, you can do it, and I will. Arr, arr!
Rooster Boosters. Mr. Boosters? This guy sounds like the peacock on the top of your roof over there.
It's funny that the peacock, right when we hit record, that peacock goes off. It felt like it was being threatened over there.
He must have heard the rooster call over here and felt that he had to respond. God, yeah, that's pretty bad. Rooster Boosters, huh?
Is that probably the weakest promo ever? It's like it's a single promo. There's no fans out there. He's all by himself. It's like a cut. It's a promo cut, you know, just to kind of get this guy kind of trying to go. And he can't even say that, you know, the competition, that he's better than competition. He is like, they're really good. I tell you what, guys are really good.
That was kind of his gimmick, wasn't it? I'm good, but you're not as good as Recruit. Huh? You're right. Where was that promo? I want to go to inside here and reference the Jim Rome show, but he always says, give me an A or give me an F, and that's like definite C-minus material, right? It's not like so bad as to go into...
It's a solid D.
Okay, yeah, it's not so bad as to go into Jumpin' Jeff Farmer territory. Well, I could say like it's a complete clusterfuck, right? And clearly it's not A material. So yeah, just go full on meltdown if you're gonna do a promo that bad. But that's like a bad vanilla promo that's just not god awful.
After listening to that promo, it's like, you know, when the WWF comes in town, I'm gonna buy a ticket so I can see the Red Rooster
and his haircut.
Yeah, with the faux hawk. He was the first guy with the faux hawk.
But the thing was impressive. His faux hawk. He was still doing the. He was still rocking the mullet with it.
And he dyed it red.
Just the top.
Just the tip. I just need it for the tip.
Yeah.
Okay. So Hall of Kayfabe, I got a guy.
Good, because I'm dying over here.
You're dying. I didn't want you to start looking off deep in the space.
A long stare.
So this one's kind of gonna go against the grain because he pretty much has achieved everything, but. He was hurt for long periods of time. He was out for a long time. And it would have been interesting to see what he would do as the top guy. He had a lot of problems, though. The guy I want to put in is a guy that I really want to hear your take on. I'm going to put in Shawn Michaels.
Shawn Michaels.
You kind of knew he was going there?
Yeah. Once you said that he was out for a long time and that he accomplished everything, I mean, that pretty much fits the bill for Shawn Michaels. I think Shawn Michaels works for this, and mostly just because, you know, he toiled as a tag team guy and as a guy in the age where you had to be like 6'7" and 300 pounds to get a shot to go to the top. You know, he is the first legitimate small champion, right? And I think that's the thing that really sets him apart. So even though you look at like the end of his career, yeah, he's done everything, he's won everything, he's had all the accolades. A lot of people think he's the best that's ever done it, but it was a long time, and even though he did it all within the WWE, it was a long time for him getting from the entry point to the top spot. So he was instrumental in, I think, a lot of the change in WWE, like saying that they had to go to like a younger set and create a new superstars. And repackaging guys like him and repackaging guys like Bret Hart as singles guys when they were really pigeonholed as tag team wrestlers. So I think Shawn Michaels gets and deserves a ton of credit, and I got no problem with him being a Hall of Kayfabe guy because that was the direction his career was going in for probably the first like 5 to 10 years of it.
So what's your problem with Shawn Michaels, though?
Like, personally?
Yeah.
I mean, he was... basically considered to be like probably the biggest backstage asshole that they had.
But in terms of, but you were never really a big fan of him in the ring, though.
No, because I didn't like the Rockers. And by the time that he was kind of ascending as a singles guy was the time when I kind of stopped watching wrestling. So that's my biggest thing with Shawn Michaels is my personal couple things would be one, and you know, it's not a knock against him, just I never watched him like in his absolute prime. And then two was that I'm much more of an NWO guy than I am a DX guy. So I'm always going to kind of hold my torch for the NWO over DX.
Even though they were all started by Click guys. I mean, you know, everything is like, it's kind of started with the Click.
Right. But I think, Hall and Nash are every much as part of that as anybody else. So they get full credit to me and X-Pac as well. So, I don't think that diminishes NWO. I think Hulk Hogan brought in an element that there was nobody in DX that could bring. And then let's see, for Sean, then he came back and I think he did pretty well. But then I think he did kind of hang on a little bit long, maybe a year, maybe two in the very end. And I'm not going to say that diminishes the body of his work, but it's kind of like how you remember it. But at least I'd say for him, he went out. He's not hanging on into like his 60s, like Flair and Hogan tried to. Like, he realized he was done and he moved on. And you got to see at least the last matches that he was in, like, he was still athletic enough to get it done. So I'm proud of the guy for coming back from that really bad back injury, that he wanted to come back and that he kind of turned his life around, and realized like what a dick he had kind of been. And I think also a lot of it has to do with like for all the stuff, for all the, you know, jaded wrestling fan that I am of things that I've seen over the years that you know is a work and you know you're being set up. I really thought one of my favorite segments in wrestling was like when, like the confrontation to bury the hatchet between Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. Like, I kind of felt like that thing was really real. And like, and this is in wrestling. I mean, I felt like that was legit. I felt like both of those guys, it was good for them to kind of put it past them. And I was just glad to see it. And it kind of, at least, like, as much of a dick as the guy was, for him to get to a point in his life where he could be like, hey, you know, that's something I did, and I'm not proud of it, and for them to be able to move fast, I thought was pretty cool.
Well, I still think the guy's a jerk. I mean, even, you know, I think him kind of finding redemption and stuff, I mean, I think that is legit, but I still think, I mean, he still has that cocky air about him. And but I don't think you can reach the level that he reached without that. I want to say a couple things about Shawn Michaels is that he helped me appreciate Bret Hart, where now I'm kind of I back Bret Hart a lot more than I did probably about 3-4 years ago. I think that Rivalry DVD that came out with JR, so Shawn Michaels and JR actually kind of made me appreciate Bret Hart, and then plus knowing that, you know, you really like Bret Hart, and he was like one of your main guys, that kind of helped it as well.
That never helped in the past, bro.
It didn't. But you know, and of course, I read Bret Hart's book, which is, I think, is probably, I want to say, I mean, I didn't read Foley's book. I probably never will. But I would say that Bret Hart's book is probably the best wrestling book I've read. I mean, I think that's something that you could read and you'd really appreciate it.
You like it better than Jericho's books now?
I like it better than Jericho's books. I like it better than Ric Flair's book as well, too. I mean, Ric Flair's book is a great book. Ric Flair's book is more kind of it's more Ghost Rider, you know, and I know there's a Ghost Rider with all the books, probably with the exception of Foley, but Bret Hart, when you're reading his book, he lays it all out, and it's to the point where he's not always right. Like, you can kind of pick at holes that he does, but I mean, he truly believes what he says. I mean, you know, when he says he's the best there is, the best there is, the best there was, the best there is, I mean, he truly believes that. And I think some of the stuff that he says is biased, but he opens up so much that you understand where the guy's coming from, and you can appreciate why he feels the way that he does. I don't always agree with it, but, that book is, I mean, you should read that book. I mean, you know, especially you being a Bret Hart fan, I'm still surprised you haven't read that book yet, but that's a legit book. So there's that aspect. I think Shawn Michaels is the last really kind of kayfabe babyface champion. When he had that hour-long match with Bret Hart, the Iron Man match, first of all, that was a great match, like a really, really good match, to the point where... you can pick like any, like the best sports of, you know, sport game, the best sporting event you ever saw on TV, where you're looking at it, going like, wow, like the team that won is really good, but the team they faced was probably even better, or, you know, they deserved to win as well. So that match had that going for it. And then, And then he had his kind of his run as a babyface champion. All the guys that he faced, all the programs that he was in, worked really well. And then he left, you know, and I think that's where the dick part comes in. But I remember when he left, I thought that worked really well too. I mean, it was total kayfabe, just total kind of like.
Is this the Shawn Michaels lost a smile leaving thing, or is this when he got hurt?
It's when he got beat up. He got beat up, and they stripped the title away from him when he got beat up. And then I think it was like probably 2-3 months later he lost his smile or whatever. But by that time I was already not really watching. It was a part where, and here's the thing I like about Shawn Michaels is that he got powerbombed like crazy from Sid Vicious, and that's kind of, you know, like, oh, he's hurt and stuff, and so like he kind of had to drop the title then. And then, but he elevated at the same time. He elevated guys like Diesel. Bam Bam was with him as well, and really made a star out of it. I mean, Bam Bam was already a star, but really made a star out of Bam Bam after that. Like, total crowd support after Bam Bam faced Lawrence Taylor and had to play the straight heel. Bam Bam came around and was one of the top faces at a time when the roster was really sparse, but that worked as well. And you know, and he's one of those guys
helped to elevate Nash.
Yeah, I said that.
You said Nash?
I said Nash, yeah.
Well, Vader, did he work Vader too?
Vader was a heel, but the Vader matches he had were really good. The problem that I had with Michaels is that when he came back, he was cool. He was cool. I feel like Carlito over here. He was cool as the kind of the babyface champion. When he came back, the business already passed him by, and he just he was just kind of a. The stuff that he was doing that worked back in the mid-90s when he tried to do the same stuff when he came back, and it just did not work, you know.
What kind of stuff is this?
You know, like coming out, like, I remember there's one match where he, like, when he came back and, like, either faced Triple H or faced Chris Jericho, he had that, it was Elimination Chamber, I think, he had this crazy-ass haircut, dude. And it was like he took a mop and put it on top of his head. It was like, he just looked bad, and then, like, The ring attire he wore like these, like, it didn't even look like he was wearing clothes because his pants were like just like this.
Was it the assless chaps?
No, it wasn't that. It was like just like this flesh color thing with like cowboy boots and stuff. It didn't work. Like, even his last like run that he had, he wasn't styling and profiling. Like, he didn't, you know, he was kind of out of place. He really looked like a dork. He could get it done in the ring, but he didn't have that cool factor about with him. Where the guy like Ric Flair, Ric Flair is 70 years old. The guy's still as classy as all hell. I'd probably put Triple H in there as well. I mean, Triple H, even though he's not as young as he used to be, you put him in the ring, you know, like he did at WrestleMania, and the guy, you know, the guy's intimidating. Shawn Michaels never really was intimidating. What really made this guy work was his flash, was his pizzazz, and when he came back, he lost that. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the knock that I have against him there. But then, you know, then he gets back in DX. I thought that DX incarnation was really fun. It brought me back into wrestling for maybe 3 or 4 shows, and I stopped watching it after that. And of course, you know, The Rock comes, and I start watching it full force again. I mean, that's why I put Michaels in there, because I think if he would have stayed healthy. He would either sunk or he would have swam, and I think he could have developed. He probably could have had more longevity to his career if he's in the trenches the whole time. Part of it was the injury; the other part was drugs. But I think, to me, his two defining matches was Hell in a Cell with Undertaker. That's when I really started having respect for him as a wrestler. I thought he was really kind of the knock against the 49ers, right? Like, they're all finesse, right? He was a finesse wrestler. Well, you put him in that Hell in a Cell with Undertaker, he gets his ass kicked and steals the show when it wasn't supposed to be stolen. And then when he dropped the title to Stone Cold, that guy was, I mean, he basically was on a broken back. And you're watching, if you watch that match again, knowing that this guy had a debilitating back injury, and you watch all the spots that he did, it's man's game right there.
And then even, you know, I mean, those are going to be like his big matches in his prime. But I thought the feud that he had with Jericho towards the end of his career, I thought was really good. And I thought, like, psychologically between the two of them, I thought it worked really well. And I think it was a good thing that both of them were really good workers, and Jericho really carried it as a heel, but then was able to, put Shawn Michaels over. And then the whole thing with Ric Flair too, I thought was pretty well done when he defeated Ric Flair. Not going to be like technically near his best, because in his prime, I'm sure he had like
that was a great match.
But it was still a really good match. Yeah. And the storytelling that he was able to tell in those final matches, and even though even to a lesser degree with the Undertaker, I don't really care about that match. The story that was going in there, the idea that he was going to take his last run at the Undertaker, and if he lost, then that was it. And he was done. And he was fine with it. I kind of like that element of it going into it, even though I didn't necessarily care about the match.
All right, so Game of Thrones, and I want to get your take on this, and I say this before, Sansa's direction is totally new territory for me.
So that did not happen.
No, anything that's happening with Sansa right now doesn't happen in the books, but there is some backlash with the rape scene, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of. Female viewers out there, and it's starting to hit the rounds on Facebook and stuff. Like, I'm never going to watch Game of Thrones again because of this, because of Sansa getting raped, and then there's another part where they felt that her getting raped was an attempt to really pull on your heartstrings with Theon. And my whole thing is that Theon in going on right now, I don't think Sansa's being used to elevate Theon. Theon's reaction. I think it's more of a case where it kind of builds a foundation for Theon to turn on Roose. I have no idea what's going to happen now because it's totally different from the books. But I was disturbed at the end of that show, not because of Theon. Like, I didn't even think of Theon. It was more of a case where Sansa got raped. I mean, in the books, Sansa's still a virgin, right? So it bothered me that that she got raped as a character, but what I kind of don't like is just kind of this kind of gut check reaction. It's very, I'm not gonna say it's easy. I can understand why a woman viewer would have a problem with Sansa getting raped and how that's as a story plot development. But you mean to tell me that throughout history that there's never been a princess that's been raped? All these marriages are arranged. You think this princess, any princess or that's married by, not even princesses, but like anybody that's in an arranged marriage, do you think they want to have sex with the person that they're married to? And now, granted, you do throw in an element like Roose Bolton, who's like the lowest of the low.
It's Ramsay.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Ramsay. That's like the lowest. That's Roose or Ramsay Bolton, whatever, are the lowest scum on the face of this earth. But I mean, but that's the whole thing. I'm sitting there going, like, well, you don't think this has happened throughout history? I mean, and it's just kind of, for you to be so adamant against it, this does not happen, and it doesn't happen to this day. So that's kind of where I want. It's a gray area, and I don't want to be like the Red Rooster and say like, the female fans are the best ever. But I really think it's kind of an unfair type of criticism.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta look at the context of what that show is. I mean, there's been a ton of brutality throughout the show. It's not, there's a ton of completely immoral people that don't care about anybody else or, feelings or, however you would put it. So it's not out of character from the show. I mean, if it was a thing where the show was relatively clean and they just doing like some rape out of nowhere, as some gratuitous act of violence, then I can sit there and say, yeah, why did they have to go there? That's really out of character for what the show is. But I mean, that's right in line with what the show is, I think.
What were your thoughts being taken away after that show? How did it affect you to watch it? What was the thought that you took away after watching that show?
My thought was, is Ramsay more of a bag than Joffrey? That was like my first, like, I didn't think that you're going to come up with like a more despicable character than Joffrey, and they may very well have done that in Ramsay. And my initial thought is like, who's going to be, cause like I you can see where, yeah, maybe they are setting something up where Theon's going to reach a breaking point, But my next thought was, like, how long is it going to take Jon Snow to get down to Winterfell and fuck this guy up? And so that was kind of like my first couple thoughts about.
Now, if a woman heard you say that, is there any type of semblance to that argument that they're making? Is that this the Sansa's being used as a plot device to make a hero out of someone else to get their comeuppance and make them more of a hero than they are?
Possibly in Theon's case, but I don't really think that Theon. I think Theon is so broken that I don't think Theon will be able to pull himself together. I was more thinking of it for, I mean, and to me, Snow's already a hero. And, like, Snow is already the guy that, you know, it's like this really, really slow build. And like, once there's, like, a leak going through the dam, like, that, I think that whole thing's going to blow open. And I want to see him come and redeem his family. I mean, I think, so I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's a character thing to make it. I think he's already like the biggest hero in the show for the most part, so I don't think that it necessarily makes him any greater or lesser. I just think that, like, it's such a violent show anyway, to pick that out as the one act of violence that goes over the line seems kind of like a snap decision to me.
I also think it's kind of a social media thing as well, where, you know, like, you can make a name for yourself on Twitter or make your name for yourself on Facebook by taking the stand. The way that I kind of see, here's the thing, is that this happens, you know, and to gloss it over and says that, you know, and say that it, you know.
Let me jump in real quick, so I want to say this, like, because I know where you're going with it. And for me.
You don't know where I'm going with it, but go ahead.
No. I don't know what you're going to say, but, like, what you're saying, like, it's, and some of the women that are taking offense to it, they're acting like that, that somehow was, like, glorifying rape, and it's not glorifying rape. I mean, they've established Ramsay's, like, a filthy, disgusting, vile individual, and that is the kind of act that people like that make. It's not like anyone, it's not like they're godding up Ramsay as this great guy, right? I think that's the kind of thing that deranged people like him will go about doing. I mean, you've already had a pretty clear, character development on him, what he's done to Theon. What we found out was, like, a previous wife of his that he had the dogs ripped to shreds. I mean, they didn't get, like, no one was, like, extremely offended by that either. You know what I mean? The way he treats the other, you know, the girl that wants to be his wife, I can't remember, Miranda, I think her name is. I mean, he's got a pretty well-established line of bad treatment towards women. It's not like this came out of nowhere. I mean, that's the kind of guy he is.
I think it's anybody that's doing it, I think it's cheapy. You know, I think they're doing it for, you know, like one guy said, like, you know, it's bad storytelling to boost a character like Theon through rape and stuff. It's just bad storytelling. My main thing is, like, okay, listen, this has happened over and over again in the past. And, you know, is it right? No, it's not right. Does it make it okay to show it? No, it doesn't make it okay to show it. It affected me. You know, like, I did not like watching that scene. You know, like, the person that I am, I don't... Any movie that I watch where a female character gets raped, I do not like that movie. I mean, I don't like it. I didn't like the ending of the episode. I don't want to say upset. I guess I was upset about it, you know, but I was thinking about, I mean, it made me, I was thinking about it for probably about 10, 20 minutes after the show. I'm adverse to seeing any type of violence against a woman. I mean, I personally do not like it, but at the same time, I recognize that this has happened in the past. It wasn't a one-time occurrence. I mean, anytime you have an arranged marriage, the woman that's in that arranged marriage, she does not want to have sex with the person that she's supposedly, you know, supposed to be married to. So, and that can, you know, things like that have happened in the past. So what are you going to do about it? And, you know, so same thing with, like, you know, slavery, you know, like, you know, well, my people were slaves. Okay, yeah, your people were slaves. So what the fuck are you going to do about it? That was in the past. You know, what are you going to do about it now to change that perception, and how are you going to be a better person out of that? You know, my people were put in internment camps. Do you want me to sit here and cry about it? The flea market that's in San Jose, that's all Japanese land, right? That was all owned by Japanese people that got stolen from them. So what are you going to do about it, you know? And the Japanese here in San Jose, they're a strong community. You know, they overcame everything that's happened to them when they got shipped off these internment camps. I'm not trying to put internment slavery or rape in the same deal, but it's a very negative thing that's happened. I think rape is the worst thing that can happen, you know, to anybody. You know, I mean, that's like the one thing. Like, you have murder and rape are in the same level, you know, and that's the way I feel about it. My whole thing is that I think, you know, when you say, like, you know, you know where I'm going to go with it, that's not the way I was going to go with it. But what I am saying is that, is this not a plot device to make Sansa a stronger person? And I really want to see, and that's so much, I'm not looking at if Jon Snow is going to save the day and avenge his family. I see that as a case where Sansa can start manipulating and start to undercut, you know, the Boltons, and maybe, you know, she'll get the last, I want to say last laugh, you know, because I think I'm demeaning what's happened to her, but I think it's more of a case for her where she can get her revenge and really become a really strong character, because she was able to overcome the worst thing that can happen to anybody, and really kind of be in control of her own life. And that's, I mean, and it's a very touchy subject for me. I don't, you know, because I'm afraid that I'm going to say the wrong thing, but the way that I see it is, like, this is a chance for Sansa to really kind of become a very strong individual, and she doesn't need Jon Snow to save her. She doesn't need Theon to save her. If that does happen, then you know what? What they're saying does have a little bit of credence, but from what I've read with you know, by George S. Martin, the way he writes, the way he develops his character, this is a chance for Sansa to become a really strong character. Where, I mean, you were talking last week, you didn't like Sansa, you know. So what happens when this happens to Sansa, and what happens when she gets her vengeance and she gets, you know, she gets her comeuppance and she's able to, you know, be in control of her own destiny and kind of affect the life of someone that did it wrong. I think that's the way he's going to go. So we'll see how that happens.
But he's not even writing what's going on now, right? It's, I mean, this is completely independent of.
Well, I mean, he's a collaborator. I mean, they have to okay it with him. You know, it's not like he's just sitting off on the side and these guys. I mean, he has a big say of what's going to happen. Okay. And I especially think with as far away as they're divulging in the books, I think he definitely does have a say of what's happening. So this is kind of like an insight of what's going to happen in the books. You know, I don't know what's going on, but in the book, Sansa, so Theon, and I believe like these like three or four women from another house, they don't abduct her, but they take Sansa away, and they're nobody knows where they are right now, but they take away from that situation
from Ramsay
or from even like. Like, the whole thing, like, Littlefinger doesn't tell, you know, he doesn't tell Cersei, you know, that Sansa's alive. Like, right now, like, you know, Sansa, nobody really knows where Sansa is.
And she's, in the book, she never told Cersei that.
No. Yeah, so, you know, Theon takes her away, along with these, like, two or three women, and her fate's kind of unknown. I mean, it's not like, it's like more like they're saving her from the situation that she's in, so... And the funny thing was that when she first came to Dreadnought, they showed those three women off on the side. So
it's Dreadnought.
Dreadnought's the castle, the Ramsay.
The Winterfell one? The one with the Boltons from?
Yeah.
But they're in Winterfell now.
Wherever they are. You know, and that's the whole thing. It's been such a long time since I read the book, and that new one's come out, that I haven't had to keep up on it. But they show those three women. When Sansa first arrives and meets the Boltons and stuff, so I don't know what's going. I don't know what's going to happen, but I just have a problem with people going reading into stuff that they're heightening what happened, and they're trying to use it for their own gain.
Their own platform.
Yeah, and at the same time, they're, what you said is that, you know, bad things happen in the story all the time. This is more kind of more of the same. And at the same time, they're kind of forgetting history, saying, you know, oh, this shouldn't happen. Well, it happened, right. You know, so fucking deal with it.
Right. Well, yeah. And that, I mean, not like it's specifically based on any one's history, but I mean, it's kind of like a, you know, exploration of like basically like a middle age kind of society, right? And you can't say like things like that weren't happening in the Middle Ages, right? So yeah, I mean, I agree with what you're saying there, and again, it's within the context of what the show is. It's not like, I mean, they've already explored that with the whole Martell thing, right? Like Martell is talking about, you know, why he wants to kill the Mountain, right? You know, because of what was done to his sister, that the Mountain raped her, murdered her, and murdered her kids, right? I mean, that's just, I mean, that's the same thing, just because they didn't show it. I mean, they're still alluding. That's something that happens in that world, right? And then no one like.
But it just doesn't happen in that world. It happens in our world too,
right?
You know? Yeah, exactly. You know.
But then, yeah, and I'm saying like it's not like people all of a sudden like we're saying, oh, how could you use that as a device to get over on the Mountain, right? I mean, you know, it was something that was referenced, and I mean his motivations. You're cheering for him to get vengeance for his family.
All right, so we're at Moon Scale 111. Better have my donuts over here on Bad News Ramen. We're still trying to find ways to have a pretty legit wrestling podcast when we're happy with everything that's going on. It's a new world. It's a new day in WWE. So Bad News Ramen over here. I'm pointing at myself. I was pointing at Better Have My Donuts, but I actually meant to point at myself. The producer Jason's going to put that in. Better Have My Donuts over here on Bad News Ramen. We'll check you out next week for Moon Scale number 112.
Chalk line and put the needle to the grind. Representing one kind, see you not for the blind. Witness what I carry on, bears a further purpose. From how we do slam a few, then you wanna purchase. A dialogue of funk, you love to pop it in your trunk. I win more discipline than a Shaolin monk. Pete Rock and CL, well set to spark it. The powerful target to destroy the black market. But when you say black, listen, I don't know, you lose me. I guess another beggar can't afford to be choosy. I come to the maximum, hardest on the major label. Any duplication of this one is fatal. 1-1-2-5, I gotta hit you live. Beat your ass with my tape, any race or shape.